Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for May the 22nd, 2020. This is episode number 7. On today's show, we're discussing Tesla's Cyberfactory is being tussled over by Tulsa in Texas. The electric dragster beats the 200 mile an hour in a quarter mile, and Mazda MX-30 begins production. We have much, much more. Thanks for joining us. I'm Don Macchione, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Logney, longtime EV advocate and Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And finally, we have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. And he also puts together awesome videos for the new Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go and subscribe and tap on that notification bell. We are streaming live on YouTube, which means if you're watching us right now, you can ask us questions or leave comments on the YouTube chat. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. So lots to talk about today. But before we get to the headlines, let's see, what do we have charging up in our driveways this week? Tom.
Sure. So I had the opportunity to drive a BMW X330e. That's their new plug-in hybrid of their very popular X3 small SUV, actually it's mid-sized, good size. Had it for a week, drove it about 500 miles, and I averaged over 46 miles per gallon. Now, when you compare the gas version of that car, it gets an average of 26 miles per gallon. So it'll show you a little bit what having the plug-in version of it can do and how much it can save you down the road. Now, the car only has a 12 kilowatt hour battery. About 10 kilowatt hours is usable. So you can, I was easily able to get 20 miles per charge on it, just averaging a little more than 2 miles per kilowatt hour. It's a big, heavy SUV. It's not really optimized for to be that efficient in the all-electric mode. But you can leave it in all-electric mode by pressing the max e-drive. When you're in the max e-drive driving mode, you can stay in full electric until the battery runs out. Now, when you're pressing the accelerator, you come up against a hard wall where if you continue to press through that, the gas engine will turn on. But it's pretty easy to keep it in all electric mode if you're just driving around town and you don't want to have the gas engine turn on. The only problem is it's really slow in all electric mode, which is kind of disappointing because, you know, we're so used to having that instant torque and having the electric cars just be so much better driving experience. And it's the power's really muted. In combination hybrid mode, gas and electric, the vehicle will go to 0 to 60 in about 6 seconds, which, you know, it's not going to beat a Tesla in a drag race, but it's more than what the average person needs to drive. However, when you're in full battery mode, I tested it myself. It takes over 12 seconds to go 0 to 60. So it's really not quick at all, but you don't always need to be out there racing. Just driving around town, picking up groceries. You can do all your errands during the day and not burn a drop of gas. And in that regards, it's a good plug-in hybrid. Do I wish it had a bigger battery? Yeah, of course I do. But I would always wish it had a bigger battery until it was fully electric. We're not going to see the iX3 fully electric version of this in the U.S. BMW made that decision recently, but it is going to be in China and in Europe. I wish I had the opportunity to drive one. I think I would like it even more than I like this version. But for the U.S., I think this is going to work. The price is, I think, about $4,600 more, which can be easily offset with incentives. So for, you know, even if it made the price the same as the gas version, it's a much better vehicle and you'll get so much better fuel efficiency that it definitely is worth it in the long run.
Is that eligible for the full $7,500 tax rebate?
No, it's not, because it only has a 12 kilowatt hour battery. So I didn't work out exactly how much of that you'd get, but you get about 3/4 of the full of the tax credit. But then there's, you know, there's state incentives. Like here in New Jersey, it would be eligible for another maybe $1,000. I haven't done the calculations, but different states have different local incentives, and you can at least come close to offsetting that $4,600, if not completely eliminate it. And then with your fuel savings, you're going to be ahead of the game.
Right. The size wise, what is that, like a Model X?
Size wise?
Yeah.
It's probably a little bit smaller than an X, I think. And watch now, someone's going to type in the comments, I'm wrong. It's 3 inches longer. I don't have the exact dimensions. It's comparable to the X. The inside was roomy, typical BMW. Of course, when you get the media cars, they give you the top of the line. So it was like the M Sport package with the best leather seats you could get. And, you know, I mean, the interior, the fit and finish is really total premium. A lot of room in there. I will say the hatch, you do lose a little bit of space because of the hybrid powertrain. The rear hatch is elevated about, the floor of the hatch is elevated about 4 inches. So it's when you open up the hatch, you see there's immediately there's a little 4-inch lip. What's that?
Is that where the battery is?
No, it's where the fuel tank is. From what I was told, that the fuel tank had to be raised a little bit because the hybrid powertrain is underneath it or in front of it. So that the fuel tank had to be raised a little bit, a couple inches. Don't really lose that much space. When you fold the seats back, you get a ton of room back there. So I don't think it would really be a problem. But we hate when we see any intrusion into the passenger or storage compartment because a vehicle wasn't, you know, let's say purpose-built to be electric. You know, we've seen this before where you lose trunk space and unfortunately you lose some of the space in the back. But I think that's, you know, part of the fact that BMW is using these powertrains that are flexible and they can accommodate gas, hybrid and full electric vehicles.
Awesome. So, Kyle, so you don't have a plug-in vehicle this week, but you have something. I was wondering if you just tell us a little bit about it, but tell us what you think would be competitive against it, whether it's here on the market yet or not.
So I have on a media loan a Toyota Land Cruiser Heritage Edition, which is, you know, the big $90,000 massive off-roader. And the main reason I have it is I'm moving this week. Actually, today, right after this podcast, we're loading up our trailer and moving to be closer to the Inside EVs studio up at the track. So that'll be much nicer rather than my 1.5 hour one-way commute. So this thing's great. I think we'll see some true electric off-roaders coming soon. All it does is get me really excited for Rivian, for all these other concepts, Bollinger, because yesterday I did quite a bit of off-roading with this Land Cruiser. You'll see pictures on my Instagram or Twitter of just mud flying over everywhere. And man, the only thing that really bugged me about the experience was you put your foot down and there was a little bit of a lag. So, you know, we compensated by locking it in manual mode with low range, but it just shows the future is very bright for electric off-roaders. I'm very excited for that. Also, I have this week is my dad's, you know, my parents went down to Florida for coronavirus that like months ago. They're like, you know what, we're just going to stay here for pretty much the rest of the year. So at their house in Connecticut, my dad left his Model S up there. I'm like, hey, can I bring it down here and use it? So he has a early 2013 Model S P85 Plus, you know, with the upgraded suspension and the staggered wheels. And, you know, this thing is great. It has 120,000 miles on it. I mean, this is not a brand new car. So nice. I was curious, you know, what a road trip would be like in this. And I did a little bit of a live stream and talked about it for the Out of Spec channel, because a lot of the early Model S's have been nerfed or have really limited charging speeds. So the charging curve is awful for road tripping. It was absolutely terrible. I plug in at a supercharger dead. It goes up to 128 kilowatts. Awesome to see that peak. By the time we hit 13%, we're under 90 kilowatt. By the time we hit 20%, we're close to 60-ish, and anything above like 30, 40% is just pegged at 40 to 50 kilowatt charging speeds. And it's just like, how are people going anywhere in these cars? I mean, like a Leaf would have been faster. So
that's Chevy Bolt. Brutal. That's Chevy Bolt territory.
Yeah, it's really a bummer because these are such great cars. They really are. You know, relatively solidly built. They seem to last forever. But for road trips, I'm so spoiled with Model 3 charging. This is just brutal.
could you see any range degradation? Or were these, it's like, what, 7 years old now?
Right. Well, my dad is not the first owner. He is the second. And we are pretty sure the first owner took very good care of the battery. My dad certainly has been taking good care of it. The whole time that he's been away, we've kept the car, you know, plugged in, 50% state of charge, keeping the battery happy. And it's still full charges to close to 250 miles, which is very near rated range. That's not the best way to look at battery degradation. The only true way is to do 100 to 0% drive and look at how much, kilowatt hours capacity you've used. I may do that and compare it against some new results. I think that would make for a good video. So maybe we'll see that coming on the Inside EVs YouTube channel soon, just to see how much this thing has lost since new.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, like those old cars. And you can pick those up at a relatively decent price now because they don't have all the autopilot, or they have the original kind of seats that aren't super great. But you know.
Yeah, the seats actually, I've never had a great experience with them. Except for this drive, I was quite comfortable in them. I had no complaints. And also, like you had mentioned, a good price. My dad is actually selling this one here in the video. And okay. I think he's going to want like 30, 31 grand for it. That's so much car for the money, right? Like, just think about the type of vehicle you're getting. Free supercharging forever. It's hard to ignore something like that.
How many miles are on it?
I don't know the exact, but mid 100 teens, like 115, 120,000.
Oh, that's
actually
not bad.
Less. Sorry, 113,000.
Right?
Yeah, there you go.
That wouldn't be, that sounds like a, I don't know, to me, that sounds like a decent deal. That's
yeah,
cheaper.
I think it's right at market. It's not amazing, not terrible.
Right. And the outside is fine, like the bodywork and all that.
Oh yeah, clean car, never been hit. It's been, you know, garaged its whole life. We actually, when we took it into Tesla, right after my dad bought it a while ago, they like, oh, we knew the first owner of this car. They brought it in for everything and got it fixed. And so we felt pretty good about that. It has a brand new battery and motor midway through 2015 or 16. A lot of the early Model S's needed new motors and batteries from early just production issues, things like that. And they were all solved with later revisions.
Nicholas is asking, would that change with the new battery and what would that cost? I'm not exactly sure what he's saying would change.
Actually, I think Nicholas is mentioning there's a new replacement battery pack. I haven't done a lot of research on this. Maybe Martin, maybe you're aware that they no longer make the 85 kilowatt hour packs, of course. So for a while, when those would die or have problems, Tesla would put a 90 kilowatt hour battery pack in the car. And then now it sounds like they have made a new 85 kilowatt hour battery pack replacement for the earlier cars. And so whether that means that they plan to make it cheaper now that these cars are starting to come out of their battery warranty, or that it's just a simple production change to keep these cars alive or something we'll see in the future, I don't know. But I've yet to see a charging curve on one of these new battery packs. I know a lot of people have had interest. And if there is one, shoot me an email.
Right. Yeah, that would be nice. No, we'll have to look into that cost too. If you could just like replace that when you're not under warranty. Is what, they're covered by 8 years?
Right. So Model S's on the larger battery packs, so the 85 kilowatt hour packs, are 8 year unlimited mileage. The 60 kilowatt hour packs is 8 years and I believe 120,000 miles.
Okay.
And a lot of those cars are already out of battery warranty just from mileage.
Right. That's not a bad, warranty though. 8 years unlimited mileage. Okay.
Right. So, it's pretty good. Covers anything that moves the car. So motor, gearbox, battery. It's pretty good.
Awesome. So let's take a look at some news. So this has been going on all week, actually. But the Tesla Cybertruck factory, will it be in Texas or will it be in Tulsa, Oklahoma? Tesla, those are both on the short list, I guess, of places for the new Cyber factory that will make the Cybertruck, the Model Y and batteries, and create about 10,000 jobs, they're saying. And that would be like in Austin, Texas, by the way. So the capital. So it looks like Tulsa, Oklahoma, is pretty anxious to get this factory. They've got a big statue there called the Golden Driller. It was put up in the 50s. and you can, it's on our thumbnail today, today's show. And it's just this big golden guy with a hard hat standing by an oil well. It's like 75 feet tall. So just to get the attention of Tesla, they painted a big Tesla logo on its chest, and it has a Tesla belt buckle. They even painted the face white, I guess, to supposedly make it better resemble Elon Musk. I don't know. It's kind of weird. So, yeah, they're pretty anxious to get the Cybertruck factory. The mayor said that they would like to buy Cybertrucks to use as police vehicles if they chose their town. Do you know anything about Tesla or Tulsa, Kyle?
You know, I have been to Tulsa a few times. I don't know much about the workforce of people. I can say I've never had a bad experience there. It's always been lovely. The people are friendly. I will say that I have not seen the statue. I think it's so funny that they painted the face, though, to resemble Elon Musk. I think that's just incredible. The whole thing is, it just seems a little bit odd. Certainly making news, though. North Carolina also did something. I don't know if you had seen this in the news. I was quite excited that we were, as a North Carolinian, pitching pretty hard to get Tesla here, something I've been wanting to do for a long time. And there's a great section of the state right around Greensboro, right in the middle. We have really cool access to power and stuff. And they flew a plane over, I guess, the Tesla factory with, like, come to North Carolina. Here's, like, our Twitter handle, something like that. And I thought that was really interesting to see all these towns competing, these cities and counties for Tesla. It would be a huge thing for wherever they go. Because think about how much we talk about Nevada and the Gigafactory and, of course, California at Fremont. This is a huge thing for whoever gets the factory. Personally, I love the idea of Austin. I think it's a great town, great people, and I think they can support it. I know it's certainly crowded, but I've never seen more construction in one place than Austin. It is just blowing up. So I don't know. Good food, good people.
Hey, Tom, have you ever been to Tulsa?
Never been to Tulsa. I certainly wouldn't mind going, but haven't been there. The whole thing's really interesting to me. I still, from the beginning, I really believe that Tesla was going to end up in Texas. And, I can understand why they're being courted by other states. And this is a huge deal. The manufacturing, not just the manufacturing jobs, but what it does to local economies in these areas, it brings so many people there. What the boost that this is going to be for small businesses, restaurants, cafes, all kind of businesses, it's just enormous. You know, at a time where the U.S. is struggling to continue to hold on to the existing manufacturing jobs that they have, having a Tesla come in here and just add, 10,000 new jobs, what it does to the economy is ridiculous. So, I'm still saying that they're going to end up in Texas. I think that Elon and smartly is listening to all the other offers and perhaps he's using that just to be as leverage to negotiate a better deal in Texas. But I just think it works best in Austin, in the Austin area. They have a much bigger labor pool. It just seems like that's the best fit for Tesla for this factory. So it'll surprise me if they end up anywhere else personally. But I can't blame Tulsa for trying in North Carolina, like Kyle mentioned. What this will mean for the local economies, it can't be understated.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Don here in the comments and say that what Tesla is doing here is just a very smart game, which is part of their playbook. And if you look at the history of Tesla as a company, they have gone where the incentives are and they always get the best deal. It's happened with all of their factories and they always get... I'm not bashing Tesla. All big, as Tom says, any big organization that can bring this much investment always wants the most favorable deals. But Tesla haven't gone out of their way to go places that have offered them a NAF deal. They always get great favorable terms. So this is in their playbook. We've seen it most recently with Gigafactory Berlin. And what was interesting about that was how the stories were rumbling on for such a long time of, oh, you know, where could the European Gigafactory be? I know here in the UK, the government were getting involved and they were putting pitches in. And, well, you know, we build the Nissan Leaf here in the north of England, so we've got a great automotive industry and all of that kind of stuff. And then when the deal was announced and you find out how long that site had been talking to Tesla and how detailed the plans were, this is right. just a beauty contest. It's all it is. It's all right. of the Cybertruck will be built in Texas, and Elon is very fond there. They've got the SpaceX connection, a fantastic area to go for talent. They will offer them a good deal, but it's totally in Tesla's favor to get a better deal from Texas to be courting and these other locations. But when the news is announced, it will be Texas, and that's where they will make the Cybertruck. They just want to get the best possible deal, and who can blame them? It is a bit of a merry-go-round for everyone else who is courting them, because they got no chance. It's going to be every day of the week. It's going to be in Texas. That's where the Cybertruck will be built. There is no doubt about it.
I was Team Austin for a while, but you know, I got looking into the story a bit, and I learned a bunch about Tulsa. And you know what it has to offer. And we haven't seen any like incentives packages yet, but just looking at the towns, they have what do they have? They have Tulsa has a big freaking fields, not a lot of traffic.
It's Tulsa. They have space. Space is right. plenty of power.
They've got the population is like 400,000, and Austin is like a 900 and some thousand. So it's like. Like half the size, basically. So it means there's also not a lot of traffic. I guess there's a lot of traffic in Austin, and there's less so. The average commute is like 6 minutes shorter. And it's also north and a little east of Austin. Like, I'm not really great on U.S. geography when we start moving out west, because I'm from Canada originally, and I've only been on the East Coast for the most part. But it's like directly north of Austin, Texas. And well, north and a little bit east, so it's actually closer to the East Coast markets where Tesla wants to ship to. So that's you know, that's a big plus when you're shipping an extra few hundred miles, you know, thousands of car carriers. You know, it's something to take into account.
I've got to say, I think Elon's played a blinder with this, with the benefit of hindsight and the passage of time. The more I look back at what's happened over the last few weeks, Elon has positioned himself somehow on the side of, and hey, if I'm listing off stereotypes here, it's fine. I'm thousands of miles away, of truck driving, coal rolling, Trump voting Texans. Elon's been on Twitter bashing California, bashing the place that employs tens of thousands of his loyal staff. And somehow, we've got the person who is best known for making these green, hippie, electric cars that are out there to save the planet. And all of a sudden, he's getting tweeted by Donald Trump. And somehow, I don't know how he's done it. He's put himself on the side of the kind of guys that are driving their F-150s and parking them in supercharger bays and blocking the chargers. And all of a sudden, he's on their side. It could be that through all of this, this is an amazing PR move, because if they end up there, obviously the restriction of not being able to sell Teslas, as Don says there in the comments, will be lifted. There's that as well. But there's also the next stage of EV adoption, and that will be the kind of guys who are like, I'm never driving an electric car. I need my diesel, because that's a man's car. And that is going to be a very interesting shift on that curve that everyone's on between I'm never driving an EV, and wow, these trucks are amazing. So I over the last couple of weeks, I've kind of come around to the point of view that actually maybe this is a genius move to appeal to the EV haters. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, personally, I don't like the idea of making the company so much about one personality. I think Tesla really needs to start putting focus on its products and not its CEO. I can see no good coming of, you know, like the cult of personality thing. It never, you know, it's fine. It could be fine short term, help build things up, but long term, man, the emphasis needs to be on product and what, you know, why you want to have one of these cars. because they're, you know, they're pretty great products, and you know, that's, I don't, that's where the emphasis should be. So yeah, but I guess we'll find out soon. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this decision has already been made, and you know, we'll be finding out like on a Friday at 5 o'clock or something. But so moving along, so we made some history last week. The first electric dragster to pass 200 miles an hour happened. So a little background. 6 years ago, Don Garlitz, who was the guy who first hit 200 miles an hour in the quarter mile in 1964, a little ways ago, a little while back, he started a campaign called Quest for 200. And the idea is to get to, you know, 200 mile elapsed time in the quarter mile. And so that started in 2014. He's been doing it for a while, and then last year he got close. At the age of 87, he hit in 7.235 seconds 189 miles an hour in the quarter mile. But yeah, electric dragsters. So yeah, last week Steve Huff did it. He beat the record, or at least to 200 miles an hour. He hit 201.07 miles an hour, and he had an elapsed time of 7.52 seconds, which this is kind of strange, because the whole quest is like getting 200 miles an hour. But usually when we talk drag racing, we're talking quarter miles. And actually his quarter mile time is slower than the Don Garlitz time from last year, like by a fraction of a second. So that's kind of bizarre, but there's a couple of other interesting things to note about this. The battery was made by the same guy in this car as it was in Don Garlitz's car. And also, that's Derek Barriger. And he also did the battery in the Lawless Rocket electric motorcycle that was quicker and faster back in 2012. When it set a record of 6.94 seconds at 201.37 miles an hour. And so, yeah, I've been following the electric dragon race for a while, and I have to say my big takeaway from this is that it kind of sounds a death knell for DC drag racing. This new dragster has an AC system set up in it, so it's more robust. You can repeat. You don't have to worry about throwing – blowing up going down the track, which, you know, happens on the regular with DC charging. Is anybody else watch this video?
Yeah, I've seen it. I think it was crazy exciting. You know, obviously you could feel the excitement there at the end of the video. It was a fantastic watch. It just shows like the capability of electric vehicles in so many different places. And Dominic, I knew you would love this because your Twitter handle is loves high performance, hates fossil fuel. So here, right? I was like, as soon as I saw this, I'm like, oh, you're going to be all about this thing. I'm so happy that they did it. And that is just, that thing is really cool. I want to drive it.
Oh, yeah? They get pretty hairy, man, going to 200. That's a lot of speed. I've had the chance to stand actually at the end of the track when the electric motorcycle from Lawless, you know, crossed. And those things are moving. They just zip by.
200 is not slow. 200 is not slow. That is
even without the sound, it's really impressive. Like when you're at drag strips, usually you have your electric vehicles going, but then when you also have your other vehicle, whatever nitrous powered, I forget, but they have special engines. They hit like, you know, 250.
Yeah, they run on pure alcohol, basically. That's these great things. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, then and the alcohol ones, they tear down the motor after like a run or two. But these AC systems, you know, that was his second run that he got the record on, and they, you know, he could do that all night, just keep that battery charged up. And, you know, it's just,
yeah, they said they were just plugging it in, just topping it up off of a regular, you know, outlet, basically, you know, like a 30 amp RV plug. It didn't seem like they were doing anything crazy.
Right. So, but that wasn't the only record that fell last week. We also had a Tesla Model S get a new record. I think in the past, I think we've been seeing like 10.56 or something, 10.55 set of Tesla, but, a new one showed up, and this is a Tesla Model S Performance Raven build with the new Cheetah Stance update for launch with the launch mode. So it broke the quarter mile for electric sedans and turned in a 10.45 seconds. That's quick. I think its closest competitor, I guess, would be the Taycan. And once things open back up again, we get the drag strips back in action. We'll see those lined up side by side. It's going to be a lot of great racing this summer. But Motor Trend, they timed the Taycan in the quarter mile, and they got a 10.47. So this is like a hundredth of a second quicker than what the Motor Trend Taycan did. Pretty exciting. You like drag racing at all, Tom?
Oh, absolutely. Who doesn't love drag racing? You see me in the video smiling when I was drag racing Kyle with the Mini Cooper SC and the i3. Who doesn't love drag racing? But yeah, so the previous Tesla record was from a P100D with Ludacris, and it was 10.51 seconds. And it's the new record now, beat it by 0.06 of a second, came in at 10.45. Now, as you mentioned, Motor Trend track tested the Taycan Turbo S at 10.47. So you could see just how tight this is. And as you mentioned, the tracks are just starting to open up now. Everything's been shut down for the last few months since Tesla did the Cheetah Stance update. So we haven't really had the opportunity to see people bring their cars out to the track, but now it's just starting to happen. So I think we've got some really exciting drag races coming up. You know, I think we're going to see some where the Tesla wins, some where the Taycan wins. These cars are so evenly matched at this point that it's going to be all up to the driver and reaction times and, you know, how full the battery is, you know, the temperature. I mean, we're going to get some great drag races here. And I can't wait to see them myself.
It's going to be pretty awesome until Plaid comes out. Last we heard, that was supposed to be this summer, I guess, right? But they've been really quiet about the whole Plaid. And the Plaid is basically the Roadster drivetrain, so like three motors and a 200 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah, that got pushed back a little bit, by the way. That was the last tweet, or maybe there's been a subsequent tweet. The last thing I saw is that Elon saying it was going to be pushed back to the end of the year. And even then, a question mark over the three motor system as well. I was surprised that they might reverse out of that one. I thought that the three motors were kind of essential for hitting all the records they want to hit. But yeah, we'll see. I think there's a question mark over that now. But certainly, the end of the year for the release of that is the latest that I saw.
Well, maybe they'll go four motors. I think they should go four motors. I don't understand why three motors, especially this is going. Is this going the Cybertruck as well?
Right, Cybertruck will get three motors. So yeah. I believe two in the rear, one in the front on an open differential would be my guess, which is how they do their front motors now. I think a four motor setup would be great. You have ultimate control, and then you could do Rivian tank turns everywhere. So right. That would be the ultimate goal. But, you know, I was in Germany at the Nürburgring when they were testing the Model S, you know, three motor crazy thing. Yeah.
Dude.
And they are wildly cool looking cars, super wide. I mean, they move pretty good. And, you know, obviously I was pumped up, very excited for it. So I hope they still stick on their trend of keeping things fast and good, because honestly, the Model S badly needs a refresh. Model 3 trumps it in almost every single category. And back to the original story, when Tom was mentioning those quarter mile times, we really haven't gotten that much faster since 2016 when the P100D came out. So I think there's room on the table here. Another thing to mention, those P100D acceleration times are with the slick top roof. So no glass roof, no pano roof. Now you have to get a glass heavier roof option rather than the metal. So it'd be pretty interesting to see someone maybe take some weight out of Model S. Elon tweeted a while ago, this was years, you could go to a service center and they will remove your front trunk and ancillary weight for you, so you can get a little bit faster times at the drag strip.
Yeah, I think this is mostly like this last record was done stock. He had the other wheels, I think the referral bonus wheels or something on it. So a little weight saved there, but other than that, it was stock. Yeah. Yeah. So moving along, so Mazda began production of the MX-30 EV. Now, this isn't coming to the U.S. yet, as far as we know. I saw this, actually. I was lucky enough to see this debut in Tokyo last year, and I really like the looks of it. Personally, it's you know, coupe-ish. It doesn't have a B pillar in the middle, right? You know, where the front and rear doors open, and the rear door opens suicide style, so it opens up from the inside, like the passenger side on a BMW i3, kind of. This is coming in your part of your neck of the woods, isn't it, Martin?
Yeah. So the story is that the car is now available to order here in Europe. I did have a look at Mazda's UK website, and as of this afternoon, it's not available to pop in their configurator or to order, or to even have a look at more details. There is just, the last I looked, no information on this at all on Mazda UK. But Mazda in Europe do appear to be allowing people to pre-order this, or at least get a deposit down for it. It's now in production, so it's not going to be too long until it ends up in your driveway. It's going to be about €33,000 in Germany, where the car is able to be ordered. That's equivalent of about $36,000. Remember that we have VAT over here on everything like that, which varies. It's 20% here. So it's always a minefield trying to say it's in this and this and this currency. But if you do the conversion, about $36,000, about £27,500, we get £3,000 off all new electric cars. Nothing to do with our tax next year or anything like that. It's simply money off a car. The government paid the £3,000 of that. And so, really looking forward to when we can see more of this. The battery is not going to win any awards. Now, the battery is a 35.5 kilowatt hour battery. That's going to do 124 miles on the European WLTP test cycle, which is a little bit more optimistic than the EPA range, which I think EPA is about the most realistic out there as well. So maybe real world, it's going to do 115, possibly. Then you factor in, well, we get pretty cold winters for 2 or 3 months of the year here, and that's going to drop it down. So that is a small battery to have on what is not a small city car. There is plenty of car there when you look at it. Mazda do say, rather than say the argument of its range versus weight, Mazda have gone with the argument, and they're leading with this in terms of their PR, that it's range versus CO2 emissions over the life cycle of the vehicle. So clearly they're playing up some green. They're trying to argue that smaller batteries are better on green credentials, that actually fewer cells, fewer modules, a smaller battery pack is the green thing to do. So actually, have a car that doesn't do too many miles. There is many, many reasons that we can use our head, not our heart, and say, well, it's lighter, why do you pay more for a car? But ultimately, we buy cars, you know, if you're not buying fleet cars, but if you're buying a personal car, you buy with your heart, not your head, and you're going to look at 120 miles, you're going to look at 30,000 plus minus whatever, and you're going to go, that's not very far for a brand that is at the moment not shouting and screaming about EVs. They appear to be dragged into releasing an EV because of the European emissions rules, which are, you know, which are here now. And if car companies don't have EVs on sale in Europe, there's all sorts of fines in place for exceeding emissions limits across their fleet of cars they sell. So it feels like Mazda are being dragged into it. Of course, there's not much in the locker from Big Daddy over at Toyota for them to dip into. There's plenty of hybrid stuff, and there's plenty of hybrid Mazda stuff, but actually, if you're looking at their company associations and where they can get stuff from, it's not as if they can look across to Toyota or who else is part of that, Subaru, and say, you know, have you got some electric stuff that we can put in? It has got those suicide doors. I'm sure car makers hate people using that phrase. They aren't keen on saying suicide doors. We'll call them coach doors or rear hinged doors, like a BMW i3. So that's cool. It's got some style to it. I'll try and find some inside pics as well to show you. But not amazing specs to blow you away. And again, just a brand like Mazda, which don't have any reputation yet for EVs. They really are. It's a standing start.
It's an odd vehicle, and it's not going to win any drag races. It's the 0-60 time is like 9.7 seconds, which is slower than just about anything, you know, slower than Nissan Leaf, slower than, definitely slower than the Bolt, definitely slower than my Chevy Spark EV.
I'd like to say Mazdas in general. I've owned them. I've been a Mazda fan, actually, because they've never won on paper. Right. And you know, the saying goes, well, you don't drive cars on paper. So how's it going to drive in the real world? You know, Miatas are slow. They have no tech and they're tons of fun. So is this going to be the fun, small SUV option? But I agree, when most people, Mazdas have never been crazy high volume because they don't win on paper. So someone's going to say, all right, let's go down the available CUVs, crossovers that are electric. And they're just going to wipe this one right off. They're going to be like, nope, for the same money, I'd rather have a XC40 Recharge or something like this that's in that category, Kona Electric Bolt. So it's going to be a cool car. I wish it was coming to the U.S. with a much larger battery pack, of course. I'm glad that it's not. And I remember reading somewhere in the original launch press material for this car that they artificially made it slower to feel more like an ICE car or feel more familiar to owners or something like this. And I was like, what? That makes no sense. Come on, Mazda. So I have their new crossover coming in a couple weeks that's not electric. I'm excited to sample that because I think that will give us a good picture of what to expect from this car as they're sort of the same size.
Yeah, it's a mystery car to me. But you have some thoughts on this, Tom?
Yeah, so I agree with Martin 100%. This is a pure compliance play, you know, that their heart's not into this vehicle. You could tell by the specs. I mean, a 35 kilowatt hour battery, we're killing Mini for putting a 32 kilowatt hour battery in that tiny little car, and this only has 3 kilowatt hours more, and it's much larger and heavier and less efficient. The Mini was EPA rated at 110 miles here in the U.S. So I think Martin was definitely a little optimistic, saying it might be 115 in the U.S. If this were to come to the U.S. to get EPA rated, which I doubt Mazda will bring it here, I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't hit triple digits or just barely eclipse that. One of the things that I find interesting on this is that they are using the CCS combo connector. They're not using CHAdeMO, and I always pay attention to that when a Japanese automaker. What's their decision? You know, was that going to be the wall that kept CHAdeMO going? Was it going to be that all of the Japanese automakers were going to follow Nissan? And we saw Honda split and go with CCS. Now it seems like Mazda is. So, you know, the CHAdeMO island is getting smaller. I think that's one of the things that I took out of this. I was curious to see which direction they were going to go with the plug, and looks like they're on the combo bandwagon.
I've got to say as well, when you look at, and I love cutaways, I love cutaway cars, I love exploded diagrams, anything like that. But you've got to say, when you look at something like this, which is taking how they know how to build an internal combustion engine car or a hybrid car and make an EV out of it, it just looks just so complicated and such a mess. And they're like, a lot of these platforms that when you take like the, everyone's done it, who's taken a platform and made it into an EV, you're stuffing in batteries under the rear seats and trying to put things in places. And to me, it looks so 5 or 10 years ago to do that. I get that if it was on a platform that was designed to have an engine up front and fuel tanks and things in, but kind of, and you think this is a car that is a 2021 model year. I look at that and I think it just looks so old fashioned now to be doing that. But, you know, as Tom mentioned this on the beginning of the show, that's BMW's MO at the moment. They reckon that's the future of navigating the next 10 years of, do we build these cars, or let's make cars that we can put any drivetrain in. So maybe they're right and maybe I'm wrong, but that just looks like a right old pain to make into a, there's just too much wasted space in that.
Well, they were talking about putting a range extender in this, actually. So they've got a small battery, and I always thought it was keep the cost of the car down, you make, keep it affordable, make it a good, doing it like a value play. But yes, but it could get a Wankel range extender, which wouldn't be an option and not a cheap one either. That I'd rather have just more battery than a whole. And I don't know, Wankel's got this reputation for besides burning oil, being super efficient. And I guess as a range extender, if you could hold like a constant RPM, it could be all right. But yeah, I'd rather have more battery. And like Don is saying here on the chat, less than 100 mile range is a kiss of death. And it, you know, I think it would do a little more than 100 miles, but not a whole lot. And for, see the British price, it works out to like $33,005 here in the US. And it would get the $7,500 discount. But in your mid-20s.
That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money for a car that doesn't go very far. There's, you know, you are with their customer base, you are persuading them from a standing start that they want to buy an EV, and then you're putting that price on it. It sits in no man's land for me. Like, you get to that price and you're not a long way off a Tesla, and then the Tesla stretch, and do you just get best in class?
Or even like a Hyundai Niro, or
exactly. Hyundai. But they're very expensive. There's dealers over here selling them used ones for more than new, actually, as you'll see on that we're showing at the moment, then Auto Gefühl have made one of their brilliant 30-40 minute long review videos. They do such good deep dives into cars. So, but it does say it does say on the video paid promotion. So it does look like one where Mazda has said, Here is a sack of money. Please say nice things. So that would
that's
be my
favorite car review channel. Whenever I want to know something about a car, I go see Thomas's review at Auto
Control. It's so good.
It's and I got to meet him in L.A. this year. It was awesome. He's a great
really?
Guy.
Yeah, it's a great channel. It's really good.
You spoke to Thomas?
Yes, I did, and he is just like he is in the videos. Very hello, yes, I'm Thomas, and I drive an electric smart car, and he's just—it's great. I love him. He's one of the.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about him either, but I love watching his videos and stuff. Anyway, before I start fanboying, the MX30 EV is coming, and the i4. BMW i4 is also on schedule for 2021. Another vehicle that's not on schedule for 2020 for its original launch is the Ford Mustang Mach-E. That's been delayed by 2 months. Do we know what we're looking at now for delivery times? Tom?
So other than 2 months, they didn't give a hard delivery date other than late 2020 originally. So, you know, it seems like it's going to get pushed now probably into early 2021. You know, there's no set dates established. This is, you know, completely understandable with what's happened here and how everything's been shut down. It's a totally new vehicle. Everything about it's new. It's different than what BMW is going through with the i4, where they're working off of a platform that they've been engineering for years now. I mean, this isn't you know, BMW kind of stretched out the launch of the i4. I talked to BMW people in the past, and they could have brought that car to market by now, but they specifically targeted a date of, you know, 2021, 2022, because they think that's really when we're going to see this inflection point and electric vehicles really take off. So, you know, they kind of have been holding that vehicle back. So it's understandable. I mean, expected that it wouldn't be delayed by this, because they've been kind of being very methodical and bringing that car along. I mean, how long ago was it when we first saw the first concept? I don't even remember how many years ago that was. But, you know, it's totally different than the Mustang Mach-E, where we just saw they introduced the first concept last year at L.A., and they were going to start delivering them a year later. BMW, you know, had concepts, drivable concepts of the i4 out there, you know, 3 years ago, or you know, I think it was 2017 when they first showed it. So, you know, that's the i4 and the Mustang Mach-E are two different vehicles. I would expect BMW to be on target even with this shutdown, and I would expect Ford to be a little delayed with the Mach-E.
Right.
Can't wait for that vehicle. Both of these vehicles I can't wait for. I think they're both going to mean a lot to their brands because they're the first real, say, if you want to say Tesla competitor, I'm certainly not going to say Tesla killer because I think that's just a ridiculous term. But, you know, I know BMW came out with the i3 and I love the i3. I own two of them. Great little car. But they put that out there knowing that there was a very small percentage of the population that was going to actually be interested in this car. It was as much of an experiment as it was anything. But the i4 for BMW and the Mustang Mach-E now for Ford, these are vehicles that they're putting out there and they're saying, look, we put the power of our brands behind these two vehicles. This is electrification for our vehicles. And so, you know, they've got to get these cars right. I think it's really important for both brands. And I honestly think they're both going to be received really well.
We have a commenter saying that a Ford executive, Dave Perakak, says deliveries will be late 2020. So I don't know if they can make it by Christmas, that'd be super. That'd be great. But, you know,
on the TV news earlier over here, there was some pictures of President Trump doing a Ford visit. I gather it happened recently because it was making our news anyway.
Yesterday,
whilst the newscasters were debating the merits of wearing a face mask, and I'm sure everyone has a view on that based on their political persuasion. I couldn't help but notice the footage they'd chosen to use was him standing around an electric F-150, and I didn't know whether, because I've heard so little about that, whether that is a thing or whether it's a regular F-150 with electric in stickers on the side. But it was interesting that was what they wheeled out for a presidential visit.
Right. No, that's an actual electric F-150. I think it'll use the F-150 chassis and everything, but they'll put an electric drivetrain in it.
And this is what they were using for like the stunt videos recently with like towing the, was that the one that was towing the train and things like that? Yes. It does exist. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's the one. So talking about Tesla competitors, the Polestar 2 begins delivery this summer, and their first stores will be opening up on the coast, New York City, and in California, LA, and San Francisco. And they're going to be called Spaces. Don't call them stores. They're Spaces, and they're beautiful, nice, blank, empty spaces for the most part, looks like, with the beautiful Polestar 2. And they say that they expect to have 80% of their customers within like 150 miles of these stores, at least once things start getting built up. And the deliveries will be handled. They'll deliver the cars right to your door. And I guess if you're more than 150 miles away, that, you know, they'll also deliver to your door, but they might charge you extra. So yeah, I can't wait to see that car show up.
Yeah, I'm excited for the car. I'm excited for the spaces. I think, you know, it's a great approach to take, similar to what Tesla's done. It's worked well for them. Why not copy it? Lucid's going to be doing the same thing. You know, Lucid's like, we're going into malls. Almost everyone at Lucid's ex-Tesla anyway. Polestar, I think they're taking their little bit of their own approach. I love the design of these spaces. I think the cars are great. I cannot wait to get my hands on one to drive here in the U.S. and test out. It's a vehicle that works very well for me personally, so I've been keeping an eye on it, and I think it's going to be one of the coolest cars of the year for sure.
Yeah, considering it launches this summer, I mean, for customers, it's getting deliveries this summer. We haven't seen it being driven really in the press, have we?
No, they are not in press fleets. I don't think there's more than maybe one or two just basic units, rolling chassis in the U.S. I know they've started production on the car now. Oh, yeah. And so we should hopefully get them soon. I definitely have been begging to get my hands on one of the early ones for everyone at Inside EVs to do some, you know, really good testing with, and also just to see what this car is all about. It has, you know, Geely's all new infotainment system based on Android, which I think is really important because it's likely going to be the first infotainment system that can match the level of functionality and ease of use and snappiness of a Tesla. You know, when I click a button in my Model 3, it's very simple stuff, but it happens right away. Yeah. And most cars, like I've been at all these new things recently, they're still lagging. Like, just use a cell phone. It needs to be at least this good. So I think Polestar's really cracked it. I think Geely in general, their brand ethos seems to be working well. And I'm excited to see them here in the U.S.
Right on. So Tesla's full self-driving price tag has gone up again, or will be going up again. So Musk tweeted out it's going to go up another $1,000. So I think right now it's, what, $7,000? So it'll go up $8,000. And he says that, you know, having it will make your, gives your car, the, you know, it's like worth $100,000.
Right.
Well, ever the showman. $100,000. Yeah. What?
Well, I actually don't think he's that crazy. I think having a full self-driving car, assuming this is a big leap of assumption here, assuming that the cars will ever be full self-driving, I have my doubts. I do think that that technology is worth a lot of money because now we're getting away, you know, so many other things open up, vehicle ownership, maybe no longer needed, ride sharing, long lifespan of the vehicle. I could see that technology being worth $100,000. I don't think he's that crazy. What I think he is crazy about is charging $7,000 for lane changes and having my car stop in the middle of the street every intersection. I think that's insane. And they're going to charge $8,000 for that. What are these people thinking? I personally do not find any benefit whatsoever other than automatic lane changes from the full self-driving package. Now, I know many people can take the complete opposite viewpoint here, but I wish they would let you choose like $500 or $1,000 a la carte for like one or two features, because the rest of it, it doesn't work well. It's not full self-driving and it won't be for a really long time. So what do you guys think about that?
I think it's unfortunate that they call it full self-driving when that's not what it does, and it won't do that for, and you know, there's no guarantee that it ever will. I mean, it could, it you know, I think it's not usually a great idea to bet against Elon, and I think he'll probably get it done, but it's taking, you know, longer. It was supposed to be a feature complete by the end of last year, and we're halfway through this year pretty much, and I haven't heard the expression feature complete in a while now.
Yeah.
Sorry?
No, I was going to say, how long has he been saying they were going to go cross country with no one in the car since 2016?
Yeah. Right. The road trip. Right.
Yeah. I included that in the article that when he originally said it, I think it was, by the end of 2017, it was supposed to be, Kyle. And then he doubled down on that in 2019, and said that, you know, by the end of the year, you know, the full self-driving would be ready. So, you know, this just, you know, and I urge people to read the article that we put up on Inside AVs. And there's a lot of comments. There's a really good debate in the comments about this. But, you know, in a nutshell, I wrote the article. You know, I basically said that, you know, what you echoed, what you just said, Kyle, that I think it's pretty crazy to go out there and spend this much money for something that it's just kept being promised. It's going to be out 17. It's going to be 18. It's going to be 19. Now it's 2020. Okay. You know, hurry up and give me your money, because in July 1st, it's going to go up again. And you know what? It's going to keep going up until it gets to be $100,000 some point in the future. I think, you know, Tesla's concerned about their Q2 financial report, as every company will be right now. I mean, it's going to be a disaster, as it is for, you know, pretty much every corporation in the world. Just about their second quarter report is going to be terrible. So, you know, it's no coincidence that this deal is going to end on July 1st. That's when the price of the full self-driving is going to go up by another $1,000. So hurry up and give me your $7,000 now, you know, and hey, you know, it's coming, you know, it's always coming. It's one of the reasons why, like you, Kyle, I didn't pay for the full self-driving. I love the autopilot features as is. It's fantastic. As far as I'm concerned, the way it works right now is all I need until it's full self-driving, really full self-driving. I can get in the car and say, take me to work, and then pick up a newspaper or lay down and go to sleep, and it wakes me up when I get there. I'm not really interested in these little incremental changes and paying for that now. Yeah, I'll pay the penalty and pay more, not $100,000 more, but if they deliver this or when they deliver this, but I don't think it's going to be for a while. And, you know, it's a little disingenuous, I think, from Elon to keep promising it and threatening people that they're going to have to pay more money and more money. Give me your money now. You know, you're hedging your bet. There's people that have paid for the full self-driving feature, had their car for a few years and then sold it, you know, and you know, never got it, or the car got totaled and they had to go buy another one and they paid for it again.
Think about all the people who leased their cars. Right. At least they, people in like 2016 when AP 2.0 came out, they leased full self-driving. These cars are now off lease. They had zero benefit, not one ounce of benefit from this other than giving Tesla free money. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is a little crazy. I mean, we love Tesla's doing so many things so well, you know, and I mean, Kyle, look at you and me, for instance. We both own Model 3s. We drive every electric car that there is. We get these loaners. We get to test them. And what did we both do? We both went out and bought a Model 3. So, you know, Tesla's doing so much right. But this what they're doing here with the full self-driving, it's wrong. It's disingenuous, and you know, I wish Elon would stop it.
You try using all those features here in Europe, and it does not work the same as you have it. There's all sorts of restrictions on speed. Oh, there's a 39 mile an hour limit on taking turns, so the car either won't do it or it'll slow down to make the turn. Lane changes have to be done within about 3 or 5 seconds. So if you initiate a lane change and there's no room to move, the car will abort it. And so it works. That's European regulations. Tesla say they're working to try and change them. I'm not a Tesla owner, so maybe things have changed recently. And it would be good to hear from anyone in the comments over here, at least having that experience. But yeah, I mean, we pay as much and get a less feature complete set of things on our cars. Not their fault, not Tesla's fault, but that's the regulations. It works differently over here.
But Europe's a pretty big market for Tesla, and as evidenced by the Berlin Gigafactory. So there's no doubt they'll want to be full self-driving for reals when that for reals happens. Yeah. So just moving along real quick. So NIO had an interesting little thing going on in China this past week or so, Tom, that you wrote about. They sold like $18 million worth of cars in like a super short period of time. How did they do that?
Yeah, I love this story. I love when people think outside of the box, and that's what NIO did here. So the founder and CEO, Li Bin of NIO, did a live streaming event, and he brought in this really popular Chinese TV personality. His name is Li, I think Roy. And they did a 40-minute live stream with the car, talked about all the features, how great it was. You know, they had 20 million people tune in. And they sold 320 cars. And those sales were with paid non-refundable deposits. People just click and say, yeah, I want to buy the car. No, they put their money down, non-refundable. And they also booked about 5,300 scheduled test drives. So the sales of the cars that they sold during the live stream comes out to about $18 million in sales. But then it continued after I spoke with someone from NIO 2 days after the live stream, and the sales had already grown from 18 million to 21 million. And that was 3 or 4 days ago. So, you know, it might be up to 25 million by now. So, I mean, this was a fantastic idea, this live stream event. And it all comes out to, you know, it comes down to the fact that people have to come up with new ways of showing their product in this, you know, post COVID-19 world where people maybe don't want to go out to the shopping malls where there's thousands of people and interact and buy a car. You know, so they're coming up with these new ideas. Now, I will say Tesla also did this a day or two before NIO. They had a live stream event also. And the reports were, and I don't have anything directly from Tesla, though, that their live stream got 5 million viewers compared to NIO's 20 million viewers.
Wow.
I don't have any information on their sales, on how it helped them. But it's good to see that Tesla was on this also. So these two manufacturers, Tesla and NIO, both came out with these live streaming events to bring their product to the people and do thorough explanations of it, show them how the NIO Pilot works, and, you know, kind of do this this interactive live stream event. I think it's fantastic, and I think that's we're going to see more of that throughout the world, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, the Neo CEO is really good on camera too. He's I think he's quite a popular figure in China.
Yeah, he is. He's a young guy. I actually met him when I was over in China last year in December at Neo Day, and you know, I also got to drive the Neo ES6 around Beijing, and it's a really good midsize crossover. I mean, you know, it's fit and finish was extremely high quality. It was very very responsive. It wasn't as great a performer as say, you know, a Model Y would be. But very comfortable vehicle. They focus a little bit more on comfort and luxury than performance. It was no slouch. It still drove well. The Neo Pilot worked really well, and I was on the previous version. They're coming out with the new version of the Neo Pilot. You know, I mean, I like a lot what Neo's doing. I love their battery swap stations. Every vehicle that you buy, every Neo sold, comes with free lifetime battery swaps, unlimited battery swap. You can just keep going, getting a new battery and never charge your car, never have to pay anything for fuel. You know, I was never a big proponent of battery swap, and I still don't know if it's going to be what works throughout the world. But in China, for what NIO's using it for, it works. The customers love it. Most of the Chinese customers that I spoke to while I was there told me they would have never bought the car if it didn't have this. See, in China, there's not a lot of home ownership. A lot of people live in these giant apartment complexes. There isn't a lot of charging where you live available. So to have these public stations where you can just go get a new battery in 5 minutes and pull out, I think it alleviated people's concerns that they weren't going to be able to charge this car. So in China, what NIO's doing, I think the battery swap is brilliant. And it's something that I think we might see other manufacturers in China follow that model.
Yeah. NIO's been, it's underperformed what I thought it would do originally, but I still think, you know, they have a good product and some really good ideas, and they'll be in the fight for a while, I think. So that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog, and Martin is at EV News Daily. Kyle is at Out of Spec, and I'm at Dominic_Y. If you're watching on YouTube, click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all next week.